fitter, happier. A program about your health for your health.
Well, type 1 diabetes is the most common form of diabetes affecting children and adolescents in Australia. A lifelong disease that currently has no cure. Joining us today to give us a lowdown on type 1 diabetes is Professor Liz Davies from Perth Children's Hospital. Good morning, Liz, and thanks for joining us today on Fitter Happier.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited you want to talk about diabetes.
Well, can you tell us a little bit more, first of all, about yourself and your work?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a children's doctor, paediatrician, and I've trained specially in the area of endocrinology and diabetes. And I have one of the best jobs. I have two jobs. I work in the Perth Children's Hospital, where I run our diabetes service. And then I also work at the Telethon Kids Institute, where we're doing a lot of different research projects investigating type 1 diabetes and how to improve the lives of people living with diabetes.
Well, maybe we should start as well with exploring the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes, because it's something that, unless you've had contact with the disease, it's a little bit difficult to understand.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, I'm just in the middle of clinic and I've just been having this conversation with a family about 5 minutes ago. There's a lot of confusion in the community about the words type 1 and type 2 diabetes, and they're really very different conditions. I think the only similarity they have is they have diabetes in their name and they both have high blood glucose levels. So type 1 diabetes, as you rightly said, is the most common form of diabetes in children. And in currently there are over 1,100 children in Western Australia with type 1 diabetes, and we still don't know why type 1 diabetes happens. It's called an autoimmune disease, which essentially means for some reason the body develops these proteins that go in and attack the cells that make insulin. Now, insulin's a very important hormone to keep your blood glucose normal, and when you develop type 1 diabetes, you can no longer make the insulin and your blood glucose levels become high. So it's nobody's fault you get type 1 diabetes. Although there's an increased risk in families who have type 1 diabetes, it's not directly inherited. And at the moment, the only way we can treat type 1 diabetes is with insulin, which we give by injection. In contrast, type 2 diabetes is a condition where the insulin you're making doesn't work so well. And we never used to see type 2 diabetes in children or adolescents, but it's something over the last 20 years we're seeing a lot more of. And again, there are a number of different reasons for that, and the treatment approaches are different in type 2 diabetes.
So type 1 is more of a hematological issue to start off with?
It's hematological, means blood. I suppose the issue is that your blood glucose levels start to go up, and that causes you to feel thirsty and to wee a lot. Ultimately, you start to lose weight and you feel tired. And eventually, as your blood glucose levels get higher and higher, you don't have insulin to absorb that blood glucose out of your, or the glucose levels out of your blood and into your system where you need the glucose to provide the energy for your cells. What your body does is it starts to break down the fats and the proteins, and that's why you lose weight. And if nobody realizes you're developing diabetes, you can actually get so sick that you can end up in ICU when you're first diagnosed. So it can be a very serious condition until treatment started.
So the two types of diabetes then present symptomatically the same?
Yeah, type 1 diabetes very much presents with the symptoms we just discussed. Thirst, needing to wee a lot, feeling tired, losing weight. Type 2 diabetes can develop a little bit more slowly, can be a little bit more tricky to diagnose in that the blood sugars go up and down a bit more. You don't always have those symptoms. So sometimes you've been living with type 2 diabetes for longer before it's diagnosed than you have with type 1 diabetes.
So type 1 diabetes is the most common chronic childhood condition. Can it occur at any age? I mean, you've just said it's sudden. Can it be prevented?
We wish it could be prevented. It does occur at any age. In fact, it doesn't just occur in childhood. It can occur across the life course. We have children as young as one who get present with diabetes and have to commence insulin treatment. The most common age is about 8 to 10 years of age. And as I said, we have about 1,100 children in this state living with type 1 at the moment. When we say it's sudden, yeah, the symptoms usually come on over weeks, sometimes months. And it really depends how aware the family, the school, and also the healthcare professionals of the that the family present to, how familiar they are with diabetes, is what impacts how long it takes to be diagnosed. And we often hear the story that families have presented once, two, three times to some healthcare professional with the symptoms of weeing and drinking, but people don't necessarily think of type 1 diabetes, and so that may delay the diagnosis. Can it be prevented? At this stage, we don't have any way that we know of to prevent type 1 diabetes. And that's an area of a lot of research at the moment.
I was just going to, so is the research being done in Western Australia, or is this like a worldwide thing?
It's a global attempt, and project. In Western Australia, we're certainly involved in a number of studies aimed to either prevent or delay type 1 diabetes, but it's not the core emphasis of the work that we do here in Western Australia.
Now, Liz, type 2 diabetes is more commonly seen in middle-age or older adults, but it's increasingly starting to be seen in teenagers and children. What's changed there?
Yeah, a lot of work's gone into looking at this. There's probably a number of driving factors there, Jeff. Type 2 diabetes, where your insulin doesn't work as well, is often related to a clinical picture of increased weight. So we certainly know that across the life course, all of us are struggling with our weight more than we did 20 or 30 years ago. And we're certainly seeing overweight and obesity more commonly in children and adolescents. And when you carry excess weight, some of the cellular changes actually make your body less responsive to insulin and increase the risk of type 2 diabetes. And a lot of that's driven by lifestyle changes these days. Adolescents, or all of us, tend to be less active than we were. And so this is a strong shout out to the importance of exercise for all of us every day, and that is equally important for children and adolescents. The food patterns that are being consumed today, you know, high density nutrition, a lot of treat foods, I suppose, less quality foods that are eaten, are high in glucose and fat, which are things that can also contribute to overweight and obesity. And the other really concerning thing we're starting to realise from research is that if a baby has lived in utero in somebody who has type 2 diabetes, so, as it's living in the mum who's pregnant and that mother has type 2 diabetes and the baby's exposed to high glucose levels in utero, it probably sets that child up for much greater risk of type 2 diabetes than the kid next door who didn't spend 9 months in the uterus of somebody who has type 2 diabetes. We don't fully understand that yet, but I suppose what it is a real red flag to us about the importance of really trying to encourage some lifestyle changes in the community to reduce the incidence of type 2 diabetes.
So am I heading down the wrong track by saying that type 2 diabetes, essentially, we can prevent it occurring in ourselves by eating healthily and by exercising?
Well, I suppose I was trying to steer away from that that approach, because you do read that and see that a lot in the media. There are some type 2 diabetes that just can't be prevented. It's linked with other conditions.
Right.
There are genetic components that contribute to it. Some ethnic groups have an increased risk of type 2 diabetes, even if they're the same weight and do the same exercise as somebody from a different ethnic group. They have an increased risk of type 2 diabetes. So it's certainly not a blame game that somebody develops type 2 diabetes. I think it's fair to say that as a community, if we can encourage healthier lifestyles across the board, we're likely to see a reduction in the number of people suffering from type 2 diabetes. But it's hard to pinpoint it down at an individual level. I think we have to be really careful about that.
Obviously, you have to be very careful about the information that's out there. What would be some common misconceptions that people like myself would have about type 1 diabetes?
That's interesting. Well, the kids with type 1 diabetes, I think the biggest misconception is it's not that hard to live with type 1 diabetes, because on the outside, kids look normal. So when you've got a kid with type 1 diabetes in your class, or a kid with type 1 diabetes in your footy team, or you're coaching a kid with type 1 diabetes, you think, oh, it doesn't look too bad. But as a parent or a person living with type 1 diabetes, it impacts your life. every minute of the day, 24/7, day and night, because you have to pay so much attention to all the things that alter your blood glucose levels. So to me, I think that's the biggest misconception. Living with type 1 diabetes is incredibly challenging, and it's important that the community appreciate the impact it has on families. I think another misconception is probably the confusion about type 1 and type 2. So there's nothing at the moment we know you can do to prevent type 1 diabetes. It's nobody's fault that you get type 1 diabetes. And we spend a lot of time talking to families when they're initially diagnosed, or a child in their family is diagnosed, about this, because there's always a lot of guilt in families. Have I done the wrong thing? Have I fed the wrong food? Have we been to the wrong place? And all of that are misconceptions. At the moment, we do not know what causes type 1 diabetes. They're probably the biggest misconceptions.
I mean, is it a misconception then that children can grow out of type 1 diabetes?
Absolutely a misconception. At the moment, once you're diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, you will live with type 1 diabetes for the rest of your life, and you'll need to be on insulin for the rest of your life. I just hesitate there, because occasionally if you're diagnosed early, you can come off insulin for a period of weeks or months, but long-term, everybody will need to be on insulin for the rest of their life under our current treatment approach.
So, Liz, just to recap, what exactly are the symptoms that parents, that people should be looking out for, the folks around us, to make sure we're aware that something could be going on?
Yep, I'm happy to repeat them as many times as we can out there in the community, because the more people that are aware that if a child starts to be more thirsty and drink more, needs to go to the toilet a lot more and weeing a lot, particularly during the night, or if a child who's been dry starts wetting the bed at night, it might be a sign of diabetes. If children are starting to lose weight or feeling more tired than usual, all of these are really important warning symptoms that your blood glucose levels might be starting to be high, which is the first sign of diabetes.
Well, I think we've made it pretty well. You've made it obvious for me that I should be looking out for. I hope everybody else has picked up that as well. Professor Liz Davies, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
A pleasure, Jeff. Have a great day.
You as well. That's Professor Liz Davies from Perth Children's Hospital.